first, please note that Ron Winterton wanted to be here, but he had county business. So, Pat, would you please like to start us off with your introduction?
Okay, thank you so much. You can find out more about me on my website, patvaughnutahsenate.com, and on the table behind. So I want to take part of this 2 minutes to first thanking the League of Women Voters, not only for hosting this evening, but also for working tirelessly over 100 years, doing the hard job of informing you about candidates, about issues, and more importantly, getting you out to vote. I find that very compelling as we are on the cusp of a very significant centennial, which is 2020, which is women's suffrage, that's the right to vote. And it is the League's tireless effort of wanting women's voices to be part of the political process that allows three of us to be sitting on this panel today. And a heartfelt thank you. I also want to simply say that I feel quite privileged to be sitting on this panel here. There's a lot of talent and experience, albeit each different, and you, the voters, have a very compelling task before you. That task is to decide who is your voice, who do you resonate with, who represents you, and who will best be your partner up on the Hill. I want to start with my favorite quote, and that's Albert Einstein. And very simply, he tells us that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results. So I think it's time for us to look carefully at your candidates and begin to change the status quo. The time is now because the future is now. My name is Pat Vaughn. I'd like to be your representative, but I need your vote to do it. Thank you.
My name is Brian Gorham. I would also like to say thank you to the League of Women Voters. I did have an engagement tonight. I changed my, I thought this was more important, and I'm glad I'm here. I also want to say thank you for being engaged. The one thing, I've never run for office before, the one thing that I have totally been astonished by is the apathy of the average citizen, and it's appalling and it's hurtful because so many people have given their lives and died and fought for the right that we are taking for granted, and not the people here because we understand it. Let me just give you a little brief introduction to Brian. I grew up in Louisiana. I came from an oil town. My mom was a teacher for 43 years. My dad worked in the oil field. I've been with State Farm for 28 years. For 5 years, I traveled the country working hail and hurricanes and floods and stuff like that. Kept ending up in the Mountain States area. Very blessed to have bought a State Farm agency in Vernal. I love the basin. It's the right place for me and my family. If something happens in Uinta County, which is way over the mountain, but if something happens in Uinta County, I'm part of it. I believe in a spirit of giving back to the community. I think it's very important, and that is the reason that I'm running. I want to be a part of the solution. I want to be I want to be part of the citizen form of government that God gave us, and we'll talk more, and I look forward to that. My name's Brian Gorham. Thank you.
I'm Kathy Carroll Huser, and I want to thank you all for being here as well. I really wish we had more millennials here. So I think one of our jobs as voters is to encourage, there's one in back, I saw a hand, to encourage more, there's a few of you, encourage more millennials, but I appreciate you being here as well. I particularly appreciate Jill. She was trying to reach me to invite me to come tonight when I was camping in the southern Utah desert and totally removed from anything so I could have a break. Like many of you, I've become even more engaged in politics than I ever was this past few years. I had figured I would run for office someday, and with the election of 2016, figured the time was now. I would really like to see more women involved in politics, and I was an educator. I still consider myself an educator. It's hard to be an educator and be in politics. So I left my position at the State Office of Education last June, started a small business that I hope will tide me over while I run for office. My website hasn't been updated. I was planning on running for U.S. House, and Eric Eliason entered the race with lots more money than I have. So I decided to stick local, and I'll get to know all of you well, I hope. Like many of you, I'm frustrated with politics. I don't feel like I fit well in either the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, never have. I tend to be much more of a centrist, so when the United Utah Party started last year and I read their platform, I thought this is a party that I can belong to. So I'm hoping that many of you will feel that way as time goes on and that we can find more people in Utah that will also vote for United Utah Party members. We are a new party, so it's going to be an uphill job this year to get people to know us, to recognize us, to understand what our platform is. I hope you'll go to the United Utah Party website and see what the platform is. I agree with the things on the party platform. And I welcome questions, I welcome talking to you, and I hope that when the time comes next November, I get your vote. Thankfully, I don't have to be involved in the primary because there's only me on the ballot for the United Utah Party. So you won't see much of me until after this primary is over. Thank you for being here, and I'll answer questions shortly.
So thank you all for coming, and thanks, League of Women Voters. I'm Eileen Gallagher. I'm running as a Democratic candidate and in a primary, so you all get to vote if you're a Democratic or an independent voter on June 26th. So please vote. I'm here today after a long pathway leading me here. I have been a pediatrician for my whole professional career. I've been a volunteer on the side. I've raised 5 children with my very nice husband, who's a Finnish carpenter. And over the last few years, I've moved into working part-time as he is now growing his company. I've always volunteered as well with campaigns. I worked on my first campaign as a teenager with Harvey Gantt against Jesse Helms in North Carolina. And since then have done canvassing and get out the vote and day of calling and carpooling people to the polls or to the voter sites and such. This year I was talking with my husband and said, you know, this year just feels different. It feels like we don't necessarily need to have experienced politicians. Maybe it's time for some new blood. We need to have someone who isn't a complete party loyalist, who recognizes that there are great ideas amongst the different parties, who could appeal to not only Democrats, but to Republicans as well. And my husband, who's a Republican, said, well, you convinced me, you should run. And so that's how it started. I am looking forward to bringing my history as someone who works for the next generation, who makes decisions for others, not for myself, professionally, and bringing that to the Uinta Basin all the way out here to Wasatch and Summit. I look forward to working with people of all stripes and parties and feel that I have the professional and the natural character to be able to do that. So think about me when you're voting June 26th.
So Jill, Lisa, thank you both very much for putting this together. This is terrific. I think all of you need to be congratulated, as Brian was saying. If Brian and I both knocked a lot of doors. We collected signatures to get on the ballots. And there's nothing more devastating than talking to somebody who goes, no thanks. It's like, gee whiz, aren't you a citizen? It's mind-numbing. Still shake my head when it happens, but anyway, enough of that. My name's Jack Rubin. I live here in the Wasatch Back like you guys do. My objective in this is pretty simple. I would like to bring a skill that I think is transferable from what I did for about 30 years, which is I was a nerd. I ran pension fund money, which is a mind-numbing exercise. You read footnotes and put together financial models, but the most important thing that you do is you try to figure out what's the likely outcome of your decision before you make it. And I think that's a skill that every legislature could use. You know, it's easy to poke fun at it. We've got to pass it to find out what's in it. No issue with that. The party on the other side, we just had an omnibus spending bill of 2,200 pages with 18 hours to review it before you vote on it. Had I done that in my career, I wouldn't be here. I'd probably be driving a truck or something. You know, that's not a path to success. So I'd like to be able to bring that skill to the legislature. The other thing I'd like to tell you is I hear my other fellow candidates have said, whoever wins this race, not the primary, but whoever wins the general election, will, lo and behold, be representing the Wasatch Back, the Uinta Basin, people who happen to be Caucasian, people who are Native Americans, people who are black, people who are Hispanic, Republicans and Democrats. And I think what we want is someone who's got some ears that can listen, formulate plans, and execute against them. That's what I've done my whole career. I'm Jack Rubin. I look forward to answering your questions. Thanks.
The first question is coming from the League of Women Voters. And we will start with Pat. The Better Boundaries Initiative is intended to address gerrymandering in Utah. It will be on the ballot in November. Do you support this initiative? Will you accept the findings of the Independent Redistricting Commission?
Thank you. First of all, one of the reasons I am running and why I think this position is so important is that it will be in the seat in 2020 when the census is taken. And whether or not this initiative passes, this is the position that will hold their feet to the fire to make sensible boundaries that make sense. This district that Jack was just talking about is 11,000 miles. That's a lot of land to cover, and it's really two very different economies. And so in fairness to each separate area, we must look at much fairer boundaries. I have friends that live in Pine Brook, and when I've asked them for their vote, they said, I'm sorry, I'm on the other side of the street. I have friends that live in Jeremy Ranch, and I said, oh, you live in Park City, so I'll get your vote, right? No, I live on the other side of 80, and yet we all live in Summit County. And so it makes absolutely no sense. The very simple answer is yes, yes, and more yes. Thank you.
Oops, turned it off.
I'm not sure if y'all know, but Duchesne County actually is in three different legislative districts. I was talking to a friend of mine, and he, in his ward, he has three separate legislators for one group of people. I think that is an abomination. I come from Uinta County. We have one senator and we have one legislator. And it is a blessing. I believe that gerrymandering is a way of the state making you insignificant. And I think it's the cowardly approach. I think if you have the right ideas, you should be able to go in front of any person and talk about that issue. And if you can't win them over, then you don't have the right ideas. So that being said, I definitely agree that we should stop this craziness. This is five counties. It's three separate economies. We have little old Daggett County and that's purely tourism. We have the Uinta Basin that is extraction, and we have the Wasatch Back that is tourism and skiing and you know, you guys, we do not need to legislate insignificance. Thank you. I turned it on.
Oh, thank you.
It's on.
I agree with what the other two have said. I think that too often our voting boundaries are decided to make our vote insignificant, to not allow all voices to be heard. I worked for years with tribes throughout the whole nation, but many people down on the Navajo Reservation, and they expressed extreme frustration that their voices were never heard. And I'm thrilled with the San Juan decision right now to give them a louder voice. The United Utah Party bases part of our platform on a redistricting commission and making sure that the boundaries are more fair. That said, as I do lots of homework, I recognize that rural voices still have the loudest voice in terms of picking our senators and House of Representatives. And so those rural voices will remain loud even if we redistrict. And I think that that's one of those things that we all just need to know. I do think we need to reset those boundaries, make sure people's voices are heard, not disenfranchise voters. We have one of the lowest voting turnout records in the nation. And I think that a large part of the reason for that is because we don't feel like our voices were heard. I lived in Logan for 33 years before I moved to Summit County, and that was an issue that we talked about all the time in Logan. The university is kind of an island within Cache County, and we felt like an island many times because we voted often differently than people out in the rural areas of Cache County did. I don't know that those kinds of issues will be overcome by redistricting. I think that we need to be able to reach across the aisle to people of other parties and make sure that we understand positions and hear voices. But I do think that we need to worry about our census driving our boundaries, particularly in a way that shuts down voices. So I'm very much in favor of redistricting and an independent commission to help decide where those boundaries should be.
So I also support the initiative. I also support the idea of an independent commission. I think that I will agree with Mr. Gorham that it makes people feel insignificant, and take it even a step further, which is that it pits communities against each other when they're gerrymandered. So when I talk to voters out in Uinta, they say, I don't want someone in the Wasatch back representing me. And when you talk to people up here, they say, well, I don't want someone in Uinta representing me. And that shows you that we have lost the concept of a truly democratic voice. Our brothers and sisters who are rural should be equally represented as our brothers and sisters who are up here in the tourism industry. And we ought to have some confidence that the person who represents us has our best interests at heart. And when we're gerrymandered, we can't do that. So I not only would support the Better Boundaries Initiative, I would even go a step further, which is that, I'm just tossing this out there, although I've been thinking a lot about it. Utah is growing so rapidly, I think we're approaching the point where having this number of districts is not going to be feasible. We probably need more senators. It would make sense to have a senator from Uinta plus Daggett, perhaps, or Wasatch plus Summit. We not only need to redistrict, we probably need to subdivide just because of the sheer change that we're expecting in population.
Yeah, that's a good idea. There's been a bunch of research done what the actual impact of gerrymandering is. And it's, you know, we've got CNN and Fox, and it's like you're watching Mars and Venus. You know, the same story, it's hard to believe it's even the same story. And one of the reasons for that is that gerrymandering has gone on nationally, basically, is to develop safe seats. And if you've got a safe seat, you don't need to be a centrist. You don't have to listen to the other side. LBJ said, you know, in the primary, you run for the wings, the general, you run for the center. And it's only gotten much, much worse since the mid-60s when he was the president. So I would go so far as to say that gerrymandering is actually the most fundamental problem we've got in this country. Forget Utah. In the country. Because if you have a safe seat, you can ignore the other side. That's wrong. And historically, to talk about this district, you know, we've got the three counties out in the basin, Daggett, Deschene, and Uinta, that are in the district in their entirety. Wasatch is in three Senate districts. Summit is in two. So, you know, might it make sense for these counties to be all in the same district because they basically represent a group? I think that this is great work and it needs to be done.
Now, questions from the audience. Jack, you will take this question and then we'll go down the line. How would you address the issue of gun violence, particularly in the schools, while balancing Second Amendment right to bear arms?
Okay, don't leave yet. I'm a huge fan of two things. One, distilling these issues down to their actual components. And school safety and Second Amendment rights, I think, are actually can be reasonably well partitioned. I'd like to not reinvent the wheel. Take a look at Israel. They live in a war zone. There's no gun control with their enemies. There's no bomb control with their enemies. They figured out how to harden their schools. They've got a resource officer for every school of 100 people or more, and they actually run a pretty safe school system. I'm 64 years old. When I was a kid, it was duck and cover. You know, we're going to get an A-bomb that's going to take us out. And we all joked about it because we all knew being under your desk wasn't going to help. I can't imagine trying to be a student today with active shooter drills. We've got to have safety in our schools, and I think that's paramount because it's really hard to teach if you don't feel safe. So I don't think you'll find a proponent of school safety that is greater than I am. I think that it's a question of hardening the schools and providing resource officers in order to do it.
So I come at this issue from being a pediatrician and a mom. I'm an American. So first of all, I completely support the Second Amendment, which in our modern America means two things. It means the right to bear arms as a group if we need to protect ourselves from a tyrant, and also the individual right to protect yourself in your home as it was laid out in the early 2000s with the Supreme Court. That's when things change in terms of our understanding of that right. Yet, I also know that as a pediatrician, when I counsel people on safety, there are three things that I warn people about. The three things that are most likely to kill or injure someone under the age of 25 are water, pools, and guns. If we think about it as a product, we as a country and we as adults who advise each other and our children can come up with reasonable ways of approaching that. For example, with pools, you can't build a pool in your front yard with no fence and have the kids wandering around, right? Someone will get hurt. So we have regulations about how to manage a pool safely. We can do the same thing with guns. We can do the same thing as we have done with cars. So how do we do that? Well, we can think about schools, but schools are only 1 to 2% of shootings. 98% of shootings are not happening in schools. Are we going to have a safe and secure Baptist church for when there's a Bible study? Are we going to have these safe and secure schools as well? We need to address the shooter before the shooter gets to the school. And so if you want to see my summary of what I believe, I actually do go along with the American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines, which are number one, we have to increase mental health resources in this country, which are abysmal. I can tell you, as someone who's tried to work with our wonderful providers who have no ability to do their job well. Number two, we need to come up with a way to get guns out of the hands of people who have already committed a crime or prevent it from getting into their hands if they're felons. And you can look at the rest of the list. But I support the Second Amendment, but we need to talk about safety and responsibility.
Thank you. I too support the Second Amendment. We are gun owners. We have concealed carry permits. We are responsible gun owners. And I think that that is part of the key, is responsible gun ownership. I think that there's quite a bit of evidence out there about what works and what doesn't. So Shannon Watts and Moms Demand Action investigate the research regularly and put forth some of their ideas. They claim, and I've looked at some of the primary research that shows that banning bump stocks has not changed the equation yet. So things like reducing cartridge sizes, increasing background checks, and eliminating loopholes, things like that do make a difference. And so as we look at what should we do about gun violence, gun deaths, I think that we need to make all of our decisions based on the evidence for what we know is best, not our gut reaction based on emotion. I released an app in January for active shooter situations, and we're right now building a safe at school incident management system that goes beyond active shooters. I'm immersed in that research right now. I go to bed every night thinking about it because that's what I build every day. So it's a situation that I'm very emotional about, as many of us are who have children and grandchildren in schools, and as an educator, I deal with that. But I think, like she said, the mental health issues we've got to address. The red flag laws could be an important part of that. I think that we've got to work on reducing gun deaths in general. The largest group of gun deaths are suicides. The largest group of suicides are older white males. You're here, guys. And so we've got to reduce suicides if we're looking at reducing gun violence. The third largest group is women killed in domestic violence acts with guns. We've got to address that too. School shootings, church shootings, concert shootings are such a tiny fraction of the people who die each year from guns. If we're going to address gun violence, we need to address the largest groups of people as well. Why are older white men killing themselves with guns? Why do we allow domestic violence situations where women and children are killed with guns? I think we need to look at the research, and we need to be really careful about what we target in terms of what we want for gun laws. And yes, I'm emotional about that one.
That is a question that is, as a husband of a school teacher, you think of every day. I mean, it's kind of crazy, but you send your wife or your kid to school, and you're not sure if they're going to come back. And as a husband, that's scary. As a parent, that's terrifying. I believe in limited government, but I think that the government has an obligation to its citizens to protect and serve. But we have to take that, we have to hold the politicians' feet to the fire. We had $555 million in excess money this year, and we've known this is a problem, and it was never addressed. There are 830, it's either 830 or 803 public schools in the state of Utah. If we took, I was looking into what it would take to retrofit schools with bulletproof glass and closed circuit and such, we could do that for $25 million. We could then mandate that any new school, we could design these schools to where a shooter would have a bigger problem getting in and not just shooting literally ducks in a pond. And that being said, it is a mental health issue. I don't think any sane person would do something like that. I am a gun enthusiast. I love my guns. I enjoy my guns. But I teach people before they ever touch my gun, I teach them what it's about and the responsibility and the awe that it should inspire before they ever pull the trigger. That being said, I think that this is one of the places that government has a mandate and government should be in the forefront. Saved by the bell.
Well, I'm very pleased to be on a panel composed, organized by Park City. Oops,
sorry. I'll restart.
Hello.
That was quick.
Go. I'll take that call then.
How
are you?
That's good.
Okay, are we good?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much. I was really pleased to be on the panel of gun violence in Park City. It was organized by students from the Park City High School. I was pleased to be on it and disappointed that I was the only candidate from Senate District 26 that chose to be there and make the time for it. So I'll repeat some of what I said then. I think gun violence is an extremely volatile and emotional issue. But if we try to peel away some of that emotion, we need to really distill it and look at the fact that we're looking at school safety, public safety, home safety, and responsible gun ownership. We do not have to address it in terms of the Second Amendment. We have regulations for driving a car. We have licensing. We have registers. We register sex offenders so that we know where they are. We have it's easier, and I will say this, for a 18-year-old to get a gun than to get a drink, because we have very strong legislative laws against drinking in our state. So there is no reason that we cannot look at putting some responsible ownership on through some legislative regulations. It doesn't have to impact the Second Amendment. And lastly, I would just like to say, this is not a single person issue. This is a community issue, a parent issue, a law enforcement issue, and every individual has a role to play. You have to listen to the experts. From school safety, they recommend hardening the school, really enforcing being able to have a student voice without fear, and then also just being very vigilant. I would like to see, instead of a resource law enforcement officer, I would like to see a very highly skilled mental counselor there. Let's look at the external reasons why we are such an angry society. That's the systemic reason for all of this. Thank you.